The Children's Hour Podcast.
We post our photos and more on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Find us at TCH Radio.
Our theme music is written by C.K. Barlow.
The Children's Hour is distributed by the Children's Hour Incorporated and the Public Radio Exchange, PRX, and the Pacifica Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, WGDR Central Vermont Community Radio. And it's a beautiful Saturday morning, and this is Amy's Kids Show, and I am so glad that you're here. It is May, and it is so beautiful outside. The birds are singing, and the trees are leafing out little buds and even flowers on the tips of all the trees. It's the most perfect time to be here, and I'm so grateful that I'm here, and I'm so glad that you're here, and we get to enjoy this beautiful day. And I wonder what we're going to notice out there today. There is so much to notice with spring springing all around. And today we're actually going to be celebrating noticing. We're going to celebrate the parts of our brains that notice the most. Our reptile brains. That's our subject for today. What are reptiles? Well, they're creatures that lay eggs and have scaly skin usually. They live in all kinds of climates, but usually they do like it fairly warm. And, well, we're going to learn about some of the most famous reptiles that aren't around anymore called the dinosaurs. And the reason we're going to celebrate them while we're celebrating reptile brains is, well, for one, there's just a ton of really cool dinosaur music out there. But dinosaurs had a reptile brain, just like the reptiles that are alive today. And just like us, we actually have a reptile brain inside of our brain. We also have a few more layers on top as human beings, and we'll learn more about that next week. But this week, we're going to learn about that central part of our brain called our reptile brain or our core brain. And what do core brains do? What do reptile brains do? Well, they keep us alive, right? That's why everybody has them. Even reptiles couldn't get by without their reptile brain. And reptile brains keep us alive by noticing all the things around us. So, what are we going to notice today? Well, we're going to notice a lot of cool dinosaur music. We're going to also hear a story about a snake. One of the reptiles that we might see around on Earth today. And we're going to learn about a lot of other fun stuff. Flying, even, if we can. We're going to get to flying. Yes, we're going to squeeze everything in that we can today. I'm so glad you joined me for the next hour of Amy's Kids Show. Happy Saturday.
They're gone. Nobody has seen one for a long time. Pterodactyls, brontosaurs, tyrannosaurus rex. Isn't it interesting how the world has changed? Dinosaurs ate plants and some ate meat. And worms and roots and things that we don't eat. Very
Stegosaurus.
Cold. One in his tail and one in his skull.
Stegosaurus.
Horns and spikes all over his side.
Stegosaurus.
He flattened his enemies with a
brachiosaurus.
He was
was a giant 40 feet high.
Dinosaurus.
Feet in the swamp, head in the sky.
Dinosaurus.
He had his nose on top of his head.
Dinosaurus.
When he sneezed, all the animals fled.
Dinosaurus.
He weighed 60,000 pounds.
Dinosaurus.
Thundering footsteps shook the ground.
Dinosaurus.
The swamp was where he liked to stay.
Dinosaurus.
Day after day after day after day. The decks when they saw Tyrannosaurus Rex. He looked to his left, he looked to his right, always itching for a fight, always ready for a bite, anytime, day or night, he ate everything in sight.
But don't worry, you'll never see him. Unless you go with your mom and dad to the museum. 'Cause dinosaurs went someplace no one's sure. Nobody can find them anymore. Seeing just their footprints, bones, and fossils sure is strange. Isn't it interesting how the world can change? Interesting how the world can change. Isn't it interesting how the world can change?
But the sleepy Triceratops didn't see what was behind the tree. Nelson, maybe this isn't a good bedtime story for you.
But I love this story.
Okay. It was a hungry T-Rex looking for dinner. His sharp teeth glittered in the sun. You know, maybe we should finish this one in the morning, Nelson.
Okay, then read the one about the great dinosaur mystery.
No, it's time to go to bed. That was your fourth story. I'm tired. Why aren't you?
I don't want to go to bed. What if I have another bad dream?
Oh, Nelson, my little dreamosaurus. Your dreams are just your imagination at work while you're sleeping.
But I know they're real, and they're really scary. They're nightmares.
Remember what we said about nightmares?
Yes, I remember.
If you have a nightmare, you can tell it to...
to go away.
And if that doesn't work?
Then you can laugh at it.
And if it still won't go away, you can change it...
into a good dream.
That's right. And your mom and I will always be here for you.
I know, Dad.
And don't forget the dream weavers. They'll be there if you need them.
Well, folks, I put that little clip in there about the boy and the story and how he was afraid it, you know, it might give him nightmares because, you know, sometimes we do get nightmares from the things that we see or hear. And I know I heard a little story. Well, a little story happened to me, actually. I was talking with a boy one time who had watched a movie about dinosaurs, and it had given him nightmares. He was having nightmares about the movie that he saw. And so he was talking with me about it, and I was trying to help him understand, you know, I was trying to help his reptile brain understand, you know, that dinosaurs, even though he had seen them on the television, that they weren't really here anymore, you know, that he didn't have to worry about them anymore. And that was really hard for him to understand because he was a little boy. He didn't really know what was real and what wasn't anymore. And also because he has a reptile brain like all of us, and our reptile brains believe, you know, everything they see. They don't understand that the TV isn't real. You know, try to explain to a turtle that the television isn't real. You know, it's really hard to do. Even mammals like dogs and cats believe the television is real, right? And so I wasn't going to be able to explain to this little boy's reptile brain, so I tried to explain to his other part of his brain that dinosaurs aren't around anymore. And he started to believe that a little bit. And so I said, well, you know, dinosaurs weren't around, or they were around a long time ago, and then they went away, and now there's us, we're here. And I just spontaneously asked a strange question. I said, so what do you think is going to come after us? You know, what's going to be here after we're gone? What's going to happen next on this planet? And he thought for a minute. He got really quiet. I kind of thought he forgot the question. And then he said, angels. And I believe him, right? So who knows, right? But the point of the story is that our reptile brains believe what we see on the screens that we look at, just like they believe what they see in the environment around us in real life. And so they're always looking around to keep us alive. And what are the three things we need most to be alive? Well, we need to avoid danger. So if there's something in the environment that could hurt us, we need to move away soon. And that is part of what our reptile brains are always looking for. What might be dangerous and what might be safe, too. The second thing that they're always looking for is, well, I know how I feel this time of day. I feel hungry, right? Morning time, breakfast time. So our reptile brains are also looking for food and drinks and water and yummy stuff to keep us alive. And the third thing our reptile brains are always looking for is family, right? How to have a family, because that keeps us alive too. So those three things are the most important things to our reptile brain. That's why we often see those three things on our screens, on television and video games and all the things that we like to watch. They usually have one of those three things in them because that keeps our attention. That's what we like to watch. That's what we like to look at and our reptile brains love best. And the advertisers who decide mostly what goes on our screens, our cell phones, our televisions, our video games, well, they want to sell us things, so they want us to look. And how can you get the attention of your reptile brain? Well, show it some food. Show it something dangerous or scary. Show it a family, right? Or having a family or falling in love. Those things are going to catch its attention. So today, let's work on noticing what we notice. What does our reptile brain notice in the real world and in the screen world around us? And what are our young brains, especially children, always looking around, trying to figure out how to live in this world doing? What are they doing? Well, they're looking at the role models around us. And we're going to hear some songs about how dinosaurs learn from how dinosaur babies learn. How do they learn how to be dinosaurs? Well, from dinosaur parents, of course. Here we go. Thanks for joining me.
Her name is Doris. She's a Stegosaurus.
I just follow with mom.
She's not even two, but she knows what to do.
I'm just following mom.
Doris doesn't have big thoughts, but she knows what her mom thinks. She eats, she sleeps, and she relies on Stegosaurus instincts.
Hey, where's the food? Where's the water?
Scatters.
I'm just following there.
He knows where to hide, and that's all that matters.
I'm just following there.
Doesn't have big thoughts, but she knows what her dad thinks. He eats, he sleeps, and he relies on Stegosaurus instincts.
With babes of your own, you'll stop following Dad.
No way.
You'll find the food.
I will.
You'll find the water.
Huh.
And where to hide from the big guy.
Hey, I'll find the food. I'll find the water.
But right now we think it's wise for you to follow Mom.
I got the best mom in the whole wide world.
And Dad.
Big old T-Rex, whose breath probably made a big stink. Or Ankylosaurus, he was built like a tank, searching the desert for something to drink.
The Stegosaur lady had plates on her back, protected by spikes on her tail. You know about long necks like Titanosaur, with a body the size of a whale.
Looked like a hat. The Parasaurolophus had a head crest as long as an old baseball bat.
Apatosaur parents traveled in herds wherever the food trail led. Pterosaurs flew.
We're not dinosaurs.
True.
But they all hatched from eggs like we said. They all started as babies. Cute little dinosaurs.
This in mind, no matter what size they were, no matter what kind.
Dinosaurs started as babies, it's true, so I guess they're a little like me.
And a little like you. Cause we all started as babies, just like those dinosaurs.
The dinosaur came to life. He gave a poor farmer a terrible fright. He just stood up and shook the dirt off his skin. Said, I must have slept in. The dinosaur said, now farmer, now listen here. You know I've been sleeping for 60 million years. Wanna find out every little thing I can. I wanna find out about the progress of man. Said, now, dinosaur, I can't be talking to you. I've got fields to plow. I've got things to do. I gotta take my car. Gotta go downtown. I've got no time to be fooling around.
Whoa! Hey, wait a minute. Don't go. Farmer, there's a lot of things I gotta know. Besides that, I could crush you with my little toe.
Well, in that case, ask me anything. I'll tell you everything I know.
Well, what's an animal there that's moaning and groaning? That's my tractor with the motor going. What's that bird flying high in the sky? A jumbo jet just passing on by. What's that long thing going clickety-clack? It's a train full of grain moving down the track. What's that volcano turning your white clouds black? That's what we call a factory smokestack. Oh, well, that's gross. Ooh, smells awful, too. I think I better take a swim in this stream. Hey, what's going on? It's green. This is different. It wasn't like this before. Hey, dinosaur, you need a job. You can't be standing on here like a lazy old slob. Clear my land with the sweep of your tail. Plow my fields with your overgrown nails. Whoa, you can't treat me like a piece of machinery. After all, I'm a piece of your ancient history. Besides that, this place is a mess. Farmer, farmer, this can't be progress. Do I make myself perfectly clear? You got some cleaning up to do around here. Now, farmer, I'll jump back in this hole, and you can dig me up in another million years. It was the day the dinosaur came to life. He gave a poor farmer a terrible fright. He just stood up and shook the dirt off his skin, said, "Ooh, I must have slept in." Now, you don't have to wait a million years. If you got it done in a couple of months, get me out of here, okay? So do something. Make some phone calls. Or at least pick up after you. Oh, yeah. Throw some food down once in a while.
Well, I hope we haven't been too creepy this morning, talking about dinosaurs and singing about dinosaurs. And boy, if you were a farmer and you saw a dinosaur rise up in the field, right? Well, seeing is believing. You very well may believe that dinosaur is there. Well, you know, the problem with screens, of course, is that when we see things on the screen, we believe it's real because our alligator brain, our reptile brain, doesn't know the difference. And so we do have to be careful what we feed our reptile brains. And today is a gorgeous day for going out and feeding them lots of beautiful things and delicious smelling things. Oh, I can smell the flowers on the trees and the flowers on the ground, and everything is blooming here. So let's get outside today and notice what we notice. And so we're going to be leaving behind the dinosaurs, although that was fun, and I have tons more that we could listen to. There's great dinosaur music in the world because humans are so creative, right? We can notice what we notice. That's a special human trait, and we'll talk more about that next week. So we're going to move on to some reptiles. Speaking of seeing things that might be creepy, you know, if you see something that's kind of creepy, you can always hide your eyes. You know, try not to see it. If you see something on the screen, especially, hide your eyes. And some people hide their eyes when they see these creatures or they run away. But I love them, and they're snakes. And maybe you're starting to see some snakes. They're coming out now that it's warming up here in Vermont, and they're crawling out on the hot rocks and having a great sun. So maybe you'll notice some snakes out there today. And we have a great snake story for our story today. This one is called The Snake and the Egg. I hope you enjoy.
There's a big black snake, he's crawling across my yard. There's a big black snake, he's crawling across my yard. He may be moving slow, but Lord, he's working hard. Well, speaking of snakes, I'd like to tell you a true story. It happened right around my home place here in Rutherford County, North Carolina. We have a nice little country place with a big garden where we grow a lot of our own food. We have a few fruit trees, a fish pond, and we keep a few chickens, too. And when they're laying, we can get fresh eggs almost every day. It's a pretty nice little scene. But, of course, you wouldn't say things are completely under control all the time. Like one year, my wife, Yana, had set out this long row of strawberry plants, and we were getting excited because the first berries were just about to come on. There were big old green berries laying out there soaking up the sun. It looked like in another week we'd be eating plenty of strawberries. Boy, I could almost taste them. Well, let me tell you, the next time we went out there to check on those berries, almost all the plants were withered up and they were dead. The berries were still hanging on there. Nothing had even touched the berries. We couldn't imagine what had happened to those plants. Well, I shoved my hand down into the soil underneath the plants, and there was a tunnel where the roots used to be. And that tunnel went from one plant to the next, down the whole row. Well, you know what it was? It was voles. Now, voles are like chubby underground mice. They live under the ground like moles, but they're rodents, and they have two pairs of cutting front teeth like mice and chipmunks and squirrels. Now, most of the rodents we have around here eat seeds and nuts, so they aren't usually a problem while the garden's growing. But voles' favorite food is the roots of plants. Sometime those little rascals will move into our potato patch, and they'll start feasting on those young potatoes. Like one year, we had to dig our potatoes in July while they were still small, just to get them out of the ground before the voles ate them all. But you know, one time I was sitting out on the porch, and right out in front, there in the flower bed, we had this clump of poppies. Well, I was sitting there, and I was admiring their bright orange flowers when I saw one of those poppies just waving back and forth. Well, I started to wave back to it, and I thought, now hold it, what's happening here? There was no breeze blowing. None of the other poppies were moving. There was just this one. I thought, now what is this? Is this some new variety of floppy poppy, or what is this? Well, I couldn't figure what was happening. What is getting into this poppy? Well, I watched that poppy wave back and forth a few times, and the next thing you know, it got yanked right down into the ground. Those voles were under there pulling them in by the roots. Now, I mean, if that's not enough, there's a whole nother scene going on around a chicken coop. Now, we're always trying to keep our chickens well fed. We feed them scratch feed, which is usually cracked corn and wheat and different kinds of grains. We want to make sure that chickens always have enough to eat. But the problem is that a lot of the time they don't finish all their food during the day. And some of that food will be left over at night. And with all that corn and grain laying out there on the ground all night, the next thing you know, it starts to attract rats and mice. And we start seeing rat holes all around the chicken coop, and they start multiplying. I mean, it's like rats in the chicken coop, moles in the lawn, mice in the rafters chewing till dawn, got bats in the belfry, chipmunks in the wall, coons in the corn patch, and that ain't all. Got voles in the tater patch, squirrels in the attic, shrews in the compost. It's making me erratic. Well, I was complaining to one of my neighbors, and I said, I don't know what we're going to do. If it's not the voles, it's the mice. If it's not the mice, it's the rats. If it's not the rats, it's some other critter. I don't know, but those critters are about to eat us out of house and home. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was ranting and raving. My neighbor said, buddy, you know what you need to do? You need to set you up some snake boards. I said, snake boards? What are snake boards? He said, well, you just get you some boards. Like, well, what kind of boards? He says, just any old boards will do. The wider, the better. You can use plywood or even old roofing tin will work. You just lay them all around your garden, and you just prop each board up with some rocks so there's just a couple of inches off the ground. And he said, now, I'll tell you what's the truth, buddy. There's nothing a snake likes better than the dry, dark space under a nice, warm board. And what you do is you set them boards up all around your garden, and then the snakes will move in, and once you have a bunch of snakes hanging around, they'll take care of all them critters. They'll eat your mice and your rats and your voles and everything. Oh, great, I said. What about attracting copperheads and rattlesnakes? Now, I don't need any of them in the yard. He said, there ain't that many copperheads and rattlers around. And this way, if there are any, you'll find out about it. And all the rest of the snakes we have around here, they aren't poisonous. And about every one of them is big enough will eat mice and rats. Well, I thought about it a little bit. And I thought, by golly, I'm going to try that. So every time I'd go by a construction site and I'd see a scrap pile with some old boards or pieces of plywood in there, I'd grab them up, throw them in the back of the pickup truck, and take them home. And I started putting them around the garden. Well, before long, we had boards just laying all around the yard. Our place was starting to look a little bit trashy, you know, but sometimes country life gets like that. Every now and then, I'd go around and check those boards. And I'd lift the boards up carefully, one at a time. Well, one day, I lift up this big piece of paneling, and I could not believe my eyes. There was not one, but there was two black rat snakes in there. And these were big ones, too. And I thought, yeah, hallelujah, my snake boards are working. All right, black rat snakes, all right. Now, black rat snakes, they're about the biggest kind of snake we have around here. And they aren't poisonous. And the reason they call them rat snakes is because they eat mice and rats. Well, I looked, and sure enough, one of those snakes had a big old lump in its belly. And I thought, man, the snake boards are working and the snakes are working too. All right. Well, that black snake's lump looked like maybe it had eaten that rat that had been hanging around the chicken coop. Well, you know how snakes don't chew their food? You know, they swallow it whole. Sometimes it'll take 2 or 3 weeks for a snake to digest just one large meal. So I figured it'd be fun to check in on that snake every now and then and see how long it would take for it to digest that rat. Well, every day or two, I'd go out and I'd lift those boards up. And I'd look at those snakes. Sometimes friends would come over, you know, I'd say, hey, let's go check the snake boards. And we'd go out there and I'd lift that board up. And those two snakes would lift their heads and their tongues would just come flickering out. Like as if they were saying, hey, what's going on? Turn out the lights. Put our roof back, will you? And I'd say, I'm just glad you're there, guys, or girls, or whatever you are. I'm just glad you're there. And I'd ease that board right back down. Now, I didn't want to disturb them. You know, I just wanted that snake to be able to digest its meal in peace. Well, then one day, our friend Thelma came to visit. Now, Thelma, she's this feisty city woman, but she loves to come out to our country place. And when she does, we take her all around. We show her the fish ponds. We show her the garden, the fruit trees, the chickens, you know. We call it our house and garden tour. She likes to see everything. Well, we told her about the snake boards. Oh, yeah, she wanted to see the snakes, too. She wanted to see everything. So we were taking her around, and Yana was showing her the chicken yard. Well, Thelma loves to see the chickens and to see where they lay the eggs. In the chicken coop, we fixed up a nest box with leaves and straw to make a nice, soft nest where the hens can lay their eggs. Well, if you ever raised chickens, you probably know that one of the problems with chickens is getting the chickens to lay the eggs where you want them to. Chickens are kind of funny. When the hens are in a laying mode, they'll lay an egg almost every day. But their idea of where to lay them might not be the same as yours. I mean, sometimes they'll walk around in the pen, and they'll just plop an egg down right there on the bare ground. Sometimes they'll go off in the corner, and they'll lay a pile of eggs somewhere where you won't even see them. Or if you let them out during the day, they might go off and make a nest in the bushes somewhere, and they'll hide them from you. And that's where the custom of hunting for Easter eggs on Easter came from. Because back in the old days, in the spring, right around Easter, is when the chickens would start laying their eggs. And so people would have to go out and hunt the nests to get their eggs. Well, one of the best ways to get the hens to lay their eggs in a nest where you want them to lay is you have to leave one egg in the nest. And that egg's called the nest egg. And chickens, when they see that one egg laying there in the nest, they go, bark, bark, bark. Oh, look here, girls, bark. This is where we lay our eggs. Oh, yeah, good idea, bark. We'll make a clutch right here. And then each hen will sit down on that egg and lay her egg next to the nest egg. And so leaving that one nest egg in the nest keeps them coming back there to lay. Now, if you want, you can use a regular egg for a nest egg. But the problem is, if you use a real egg, you've got to mark that egg really well. So that way, you don't pick up the nest egg by mistake. Because after that nest egg has been lying there in the nest for a month or two, you don't want to take that one back to the house and try to cook it for breakfast. Have you ever tried to cook a rotten egg? Whew, yuck. It'll drive you out of the house. So we decided, all right, if we're going to use a nest egg, here we live in the 20th century, the space age, the age of plastics, we'll just try a plastic egg. So we put a grade-A-sized plastic egg in the nest. And the chickens, they didn't mind at all. They didn't even seem to notice that it was plastic. They'd see that egg sitting there, and they'd say, bark, oh, that's where we lay our eggs. Bark, look, someone's laid there already. Come on, girls. And they'd each take a turn and sit down on that plastic egg and lay their eggs all around that plastic one. And that worked great. This way, we always knew which egg was our nest egg, and it wasn't long before all those hens were laying their eggs in that nest box, just like we wanted them to. It seemed like everything was under control. Ha ha. Well, you know, while Yana was taking Thelma around, showing Thelma the chicken yard, she was telling her about our plastic nest egg. She was saying, you know, Thelma, the funniest thing happened. About 3 weeks ago, she said, that plastic nest egg just disappeared. Now, we couldn't imagine what had happened to our plastic egg. We cleaned the whole chicken coop out, and we could not find that egg. I mean, what in the world would take a plastic egg? We could not imagine. Well, it didn't take Thelma long at all. She says, I bet the snake ate it. I said, nah, that's too weird. Even from my backyard, Thelma, nah. And she said, I bet it did. Take me out there to those snake boards. Let's look at those snakes. Well, we went out there to the snake board, and I lifted that board up, and there was that snake with the lump in it. And you know, that lump did look sort of round. She says, there's your egg right there. I said, nah, couldn't be. I said, Thelma, would a snake be stupid enough to swallow a plastic egg? She said, a chicken's stupid enough to sit on one. Why wouldn't a snake be stupid enough to eat one? I thought, no, it couldn't be. I was still in complete denial. And Thelma said, there it is. I bet that's the egg. Yes, sir, that's that egg. You better do something about it, she said. That snake has got a hunk of plastic stuck in its belly, and that snake's going to die, and it's going to be your fault because you fed it a plastic egg. Now, you better do something. I thought, do something? What am I supposed to do? Snake surgery? I mean, I'm sure I could cut that snake open, but how would I sew it back up? And think of all the pain it would cause that snake. I thought, nah, I don't know what to do. She says, you better catch that snake. You better do something. I thought, all right, I better at least catch that snake and check it out. Now, a lot of times when you try to catch a wild snake, they get really scared because to them, you're like a giant attacking them. And they'll flail around and they'll panic and they'll try to get away. Sometimes they'll get so scared they whirl around and bite you. Now, getting bitten by a snake that's not poisonous is really no big deal. Because if a snake is not poisonous, it just has little tiny teeth. And if it does bite, it just makes a little scratch, like the kind of scratches you get picking blackberries or running through the bushes. So I slowly reached down and I picked the snake up. I was as gentle as I could be. And I think that snake could tell by the way I handled it that I was friendly. It didn't try to get away. It didn't struggle. It didn't try to bite me. It seemed like maybe it knew I was trying to help. Well, I felt that lump. And it felt just like a plastic egg. And I thought, oh, no. What am I going to do? All right, well, let's see. I decided I would take it up to the house. We might as well be scientific about this. We'll measure how long the snake is, and we'll measure how far the egg is down the snake. Then maybe we can call the science museum or figure something else to do. So we took it up to the house, and we measured it. The snake was 6 feet long, and that egg was 32 inches down that snake, almost halfway. And I thought, how am I going to get that egg out of there? I just couldn't see cutting that snake open. And then I got an idea. Maybe I could just squeeze behind that egg and push it right back up out of that snake. So I just started squeezing, gently but firmly. And that poor snake just started writhing about. Yana was trying to hold the snake, and I was squeezing gently and firmly as I could. And it seemed like I got that egg to move just a little bit. Yep. Maybe an inch. Then I squeezed a little more, and it moved another inch. Then I squeezed a little more, and it moved another inch. And I kept working that egg up that snake, inch by inch by inch by inch. Yana was holding that snake, and I was squeezing away there, inch by inch by inch. And then I held the snake and Yana squeezed. Inch by inch by inch. We were making progress now. And that snake kept writhing back and forth, trying to help us as best as it could. And we kept squeezing that egg. Inch by inch by inch. And then we got to the last maybe 18 inches or so. The last foot and a half. And the snake's own peristalsis took over. That's its own muscular contractions took over. And it seemed like that snake was bringing the egg up by itself, all on its own. So we just held that snake as gently as we could and watched that snake slowly move that egg along, inch by inch by inch. And in the meantime, the snake's mouth was open, its tongue was hanging out. And you know how a snake has a forked tongue? Well, the two tips of its forked tongue were stuck together, and there was a stream of clear drool coming off the tip of that snake's tongue. And that snake was making a noise, and it sounded something like this. Now, that's true. I mean, snakes don't usually make noise, but you sure could hear this one. And we watched that egg slowly move along that snake's neck, inch by inch by inch. We watched the neck swell up. We watched the head swell up. We watched the mouth and the jaws get unhinged and all distended. That mouth was just gaping wide open, and you could see something white in the back of that snake's throat. It was coming up. And that snake went, bluh, and that egg plopped forth on the ground. I picked it up. Well, there was our plastic egg. I rinsed it off and looked it over. I thought, oh my goodness, that flimsy plastic egg looked just like it did when it was back in the hen house almost a month ago. It was absolutely unchanged. 3 weeks in that snake's belly didn't affect that plastic egg one bit. Well, you know, snakes have very powerful digestive juices. And when a snake swallows a bird or a rat, it digests just about everything. The bones and the hair and the feathers and the toenails, all those parts of the animal. But as powerful as that snake's digestive juices were, it didn't even touch this thin plastic egg. And I thought, my goodness, you know how they're always talking about not throwing plastic out in the environment? Well, all of a sudden, it made sense to me what they're talking about. That's why they're always saying how plastic can be such a problem in nature. Nothing digests it. So anyway, I thought, that poor snake, it hadn't had any food or water for weeks. What can I do? So I took the snake, and I put it in a big, empty aquarium tank that I had. And I put some rocks and boards and a dish of water in there with the snake. Well, that snake crawled right up to that dish of water. His tongue flickered out a couple of times. And then that snake just started to drink. Well, it drank. And it drank. And it drank. It drank almost that whole dish of water. And then it just curled up in the corner of the tank. I guess it was just trying to rest. And that snake needed a little chance to rest and recover. I could imagine it had a sore throat. It certainly has a long enough throat to be sore. So, okay, I thought, I better keep it a little while, keep it overnight maybe, and make sure it's fully recovered before I let it go again. So I put a cover over the tank, and we left it alone till the next morning. Did you ever wake up with a black snake on your mind? Well, I can tell you, I sure did. The first thing I did when I came down the next morning was check on that snake. Well, it was coiled up, resting there in the corner of that tank, and it looked like it was in fine shape. Well, I figured I'd just let it go, but I was wishing that I could just feed it something. But I couldn't think of what I had that it would eat. We didn't have any fresh rats or mice handy. And then right there I hear, down at the chicken coop, it sounded like a hen might have just laid an egg. You know, a hen makes a lot of noises after she lays an egg, and the rooster, he crows a lot too. I wondered, how would that snake relate to an egg now? I went running down the chicken coop, and I got down there, and I looked in that nest, and sure enough, there was an egg. I picked that egg up, and that egg was still warm. Now, you talk about a fresh egg. You don't get an egg any fresher than that. I took that egg back, and I put it right in there with that snake. That snake lifted up its head, and its tongue started flickering out all around that egg. And we watched that snake's mouth open up, and that lower jaw slid under that egg, and soon the snake's entire head was distended and stretched out around that egg. Well, we watched that egg slowly move down that snake's neck, inch by inch by inch, just like we'd watched the day before, but going the right way this time. And this time, when it got into the snake about 8 or 9 inches, the egg just stopped, and the snake bent its body at a right angle, just made like a corner with its body, and sure enough, that egg stayed there for a minute, and all of a sudden, you could hear a sound. It sounded something like this. And we looked, and that lump that used to be the whole egg just collapsed. The snake had a place where it could break the egg right in its body. And then that egg slid right down into the snake's belly, and in another minute, you couldn't even tell that snake had eaten anything. And that snake looked up, and you know, it's hard to read the expression on a snake, but it seemed like that snake was saying, ah, now that's the way an egg's supposed to be. Well, I kept that snake around for a little while, and I fed it a few more eggs, and then I let it go. And for a number of years after that, that snake kept coming back, and every year we'd see that snake. It got so tame that it would actually take an egg out of my hand. And you know, we don't use a plastic egg as our nest egg in our chicken coop anymore. We leave a real egg out there. And you know, sometimes in the summer, our nest egg will disappear. But we just figure that eggs, well, eggs are not very expensive. But a good rat catcher is a precious thing indeed. And that's the true story of the snake and the egg. Did you ever wake up with a black snake in your yard? He might be moving slow, but Lord, he's working hard.
Welcome back, folks. We've been going from dinosaurs to snakes, and I had approval to play that snake story because when I played it last year, a good loved one of mine who is not a big fan of snakes said that she had still enjoyed that story, which was great. And it is. It's a great story. It helps explain, you know, the instincts that reptile brains, you know, are born with. They're born with the instinct to look for food, like yummy eggs and drinks, and to stay away from danger and to make snake families. And those are the instincts they're born with. But then our reptile brains keep learning. They're always paying attention, and they're always learning from everything around us. And what do you think that snake in the story learned about eggs? I hope it learned the difference between a plastic egg and a real egg, right? I'm pretty sure it remembered, and that's the job of our reptile brain, is to hold on to all of those lessons and all of those experiences over our whole life and make sure that we can stay alive, right? Those three important things: avoid danger and eat good stuff and drink good water and things, and of course get love from our families, and those three things are so important, and we need to be focused on those. Now, unfortunately, just like snake brains, our reptile brains inside of our heads, they can also get fooled into thinking things that aren't good for us are, right? Like by junk food advertising and fast food advertising. And boy, if I watch television, there are commercials for things that are so bad for our bodies to eat. I mean, it's okay to have a treat once in a while, but you don't want to eat them all the time. And they don't tell you about that in the commercial, do they? They just show people having a good time and eating this stuff and just loving it. And they don't tell you about the other parts. So we do have to be careful what we teach our reptile brains, because they're always learning. And how do we get to where we want to be, you know? Well, reptiles, you know, are the creatures who learn to fly. And this next song is about a leaping lizard who learns to fly. And so if we all kind of aim for where we're going the way the lizards aimed for the air and learned to fly, then then maybe we can become angels. I don't know what we'll become, but we can certainly keep growing, and we can certainly keep learning and go in the direction we want to go. And being afraid of snakes or being afraid of dinosaurs, I'm crow. We don't need to be that way, at least not in Vermont. The snakes here are pretty kind. So we want to feed our brains with all kinds of healthy things that help us be healthy and strong and brave, like this lizard. So let's go on to the next bunch of songs. I'm so glad you joined me. We have a lot of good music to squeeze in here. Happy Saturday.
Walking along, I felt kind of light, light in a mysterious way. So I started to skip, then I started to run, then I started to float away. I spread my arms, I held my breath, my feet dangled out behind me. Street and over my school and away where no one could find me. I floated away, flying, flying high above all that I'd known. I floated away, flying, flying far, far away from my home. In dangerous jungles, the crocodiles snapped their jaws at my feet. I laughed as I flew up into the treetops, where I dined with the monkeys on dinosaur meat. I sang with the birds as we flew to the mountains and whirled round the peaks covered in snow. Then we dove through the clouds and down the valley where the farmers thought I was a flying scarecrow. I floated away, flying, flying high above all that I'd known. I floated away, flying, flying far, far away from my home. Thank you. The sun went down, the birds went home. I was left all alone in the sky. I began to miss my friends and family. I wiped a tear from my eye. Then I heard my name coming over the wind, and I saw a huge hot air balloon. It was Mom and Dad. They gathered me up, and together we sailed to the moon. We floated away, flying, flying high above all that we'd known. We floated away, flying, flying far, far away from our home. Far, far away from our home. And now we are back, safe at home.
Welcome back, folks. We are at the end of Amy's Kids Show today, and we have been all over the map. But on a very, very strategic theme here that just sort of fell together magically, as it always does. We started out with dinosaurs, of course, and then went to snakes, and then ended up flying with the birds, you know? And they have bird brains, too. They have reptile brains, just like all us creatures do. And those reptile brains, you know, are great at learning things. They're always learning things, and that's why we were celebrating them today. And we're also, I loved ending with flying, because flying is such a great thing, isn't it? Wouldn't that be really neat to be able to fly like that? Now, of course, we need wings first. And the reptiles, the lizards figured out how to do that, how to grow wings. We're still working on that. But see, humans are so super special, because we have extra layers on top of our reptile brains. Inside our heads, we have a reptile brain in the middle, and then we have other layers on top. And that's what makes us so special. We're going to learn about those layers next week, especially the top layer, the human layer, which is where we can figure out how to build things like hot air balloons and airplanes. And so while we haven't grown wings yet, we have figured out how to fly. So that's pretty special too. And so how did we learn how to do all that stuff? Well, we grew. We kept growing and learning and keeping our intentions focused on where we want to get to. And so how do we learn? How do our brains grow in such amazing ways? Well, we have to feel safe. And so I hope that you're going to fill your weekend with all kinds of safe and amazing things, like look at the beauty outside and the buds on the trees and nature waking up and the flowers everywhere. Let's go out and see what we can notice today. What do you say? And spend lots of time with those we love. So I hope you have a great one, folks. Thanks for joining me for Amy's Kids Show. We'll see you next week.
They're gone. Nobody has seen one for a long time. Pterodactyls, brontosaurs, Tyrannosaurus Rex. Isn't it interesting how the world has changed? Dinosaurs ate plants and some ate meat. And worms and roots and things that we don't eat. Very
Stegosaurus.
Cold. One in his tail and one in his skull.
Stegosaurus.
Horns and spikes all over his
Stegosaurus.
Side. He flattened his enemies with a
brachiosaurus.
Dinosaurus. He was a giant 40 feet high.
Dinosaurus.
Feet in the swamp, head in the sky.
Dinosaurus.
He had his nose on top of his head.
Dinosaurus.
When he sneezed, all the animals fled.
Dinosaurus.
He weighed 60,000 pounds.
Dinosaurus.
Thundering footsteps shook the ground.
Dinosaurus.
The swamp was where he liked to stay.
Dinosaurus.
This is WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Goddard College Community Radio.
This is Music as Art Radio, and I'm your host and producer, Rukumeri.